Welcome to Cultimatum, the podcast that delves deep into the culture of complexities of cults and human trafficking. I'm your host, Anonymous Andrew. Each week, we explore different facets of cult life and human trafficking, from the psychological manipulation to the brave stories of those who have escaped.
Hello, everyone. I'm Melody. I'm Andrew's co-host. Having experienced the depth of a cult firsthand, specifically the House of Yahweh, I'm here as an advocate for fellow survivors. My journey has inspired me to help others who find themselves in similar situations. This podcast is committed to respecting our guests' privacy to ensure their comfort and safety. We offer them the option to remain anonymous.
Additionally, we would like to include a disclaimer. The views and opinions expressed by our hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of Cultimatum or its affiliates. Cultimatum is not responsible and does not verify for accuracy any of the information shared by our hosts and guests. The content discussed on this podcast is based on personal experiences, opinions, and speculation, and should not be construed as professional services or advice. Neither the host nor the guest are assuming liability for any misuse or reliance on the information presented. This podcast is for informational purposes only, and listeners are encouraged to conduct their own research and seek professional advice where appropriate.
Before we dive into today's episode, we want to issue a trigger warning. Some episodes may explore explicit and potentially disturbing topics such as sexual abuse, rape, human trafficking, suicide, and other sensitive subjects. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to the Cultimatum Podcast, the culture of cults and human trafficking. And my name is Anonymous Andrew, and with me is my co-host Melody. Hi, Melody.
Hi, Andrew. We have got a treat today. It is another new group that we have not done before. We have got somebody from the LDS, which for any of those out there who don't know, that is the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and otherwise known as Mormons. And so we've got Vina with us. Sorry. And she is joining us. Vina, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you both so much for having me on.
Oh, thank you. Every time an ex-member comes on of a cult and is brave enough to come on and tell his or her story, it's just kudos to you. And thank you for doing that. So, okay, Melly, I'm going to let you take it from here.
Vina, just start wherever you'd like. And then if we have any questions, we'll ask as necessary. I mean, if you want to start with a little bit of history of the LDS, for those who may not know a lot about it, you could start there. Or you could start with your own personal story. It's really, we're going to leave that in your court.
Okay. I do think that I'll just start with my own personal story. And, you know, the church's history kind of will come out naturally. I was born into the church. My mom was a convert, and I was a member for 40 years. Now, in our religion, you are either active or inactive, or you're a non-member. And it's kind of like a rite of passage that when you go off to college, you know, sometimes you become inactive as you are a, you know, college student, and you get out there in the big world and things start happening that are don't align with your religious beliefs. So a lot of college students go inactive for a while. And that same thing happened to me. But for the most part, I was a strong member for 40 years. And especially, I would say, the 18 years leading up to my 40th birthday, those 18 years leading up to that, because the 40th birthday is when I quit the church fully. But in those 18 years, I went as high as a female Mormon could go, basically. And all of my mom and her children are Mormons. Throughout my history, I will say that there were moments that I questioned things. But as Mormons, we are taught to not question. We're specifically taught to not question. So when those topics did come up, and if I did or was brave enough to bring them up, I was always given a typical Mormon response of, you know, there are some things that are just learned in the hereafter. Not everything needs to be known here on earth. And I remember many times thinking, well, okay, but I'm not comfortable with that teaching here on earth. Like, you know, and but I had no one to talk to about it. You can't talk to members about it. You can't talk to your leaders about it. If you talk to your family about it, they think that you're being doubtful. So it can cause family issues. So over the years, you just learn to shut up and just go with the process. And, you know, you don't want to rock the boat in any way.
Yeah, well, we hear that in many cults, which is part of the whole brainwashing, manipulation, and coercion. They plant this concept in you, especially if you were at a young age. This is so you were born, you said you were born into the cult.
Yes, I was born into it.
Okay.
And so it's a family
raised
religion.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, it's funny because I just visited my grandkids yesterday and I'm watching them grow up, and you absorb what's around you. So, all for you, everything around you was LDS, right? You didn't know anything else.
It's really funny. I was talking to my husband about this the other day, that the LDS religion is so mainstream in today's society that you don't feel like you're in a cult. You just feel like you're part of a mainstream religion that is a little bit different than, you know, some of your other religions, but you don't really feel like you're in a cult in the LDS religion. But the problem with that is that your family, unlike most cults who the family is out to save them from the cult, right? In the LDS religion, your family is members. And so you have it at home and it's an expectation at home. You know, I remember growing up, like, it was a big, huge rule. You don't go shopping on Sunday. You don't go out to eat on Sunday. Like, your family is living this very extremely cultural religion. So you don't have any reprieve from it at home or with your friends, because all of your friends are Mormon, because we tend to only associate with each other. So there's never really an outlet in the LDS church for members that might want to question certain things.
So as Melody said in the beginning, this is one of the cults we have not covered yet. When I was growing up, and I grew up in the Roman Catholic Church, I did hear of the Mormons. And of course, in the Catholic Church, you can only have one. So the Mormons, forgive me, because I'm a little ignorant. No. The Mormons are the ones that you can have multiple wives?
No. Yeah, it is a spinoff. There's two spinoffs.
Okay. See, this is what my ignorance. So, all right. But I did hear of the Mormons, and they were based in Utah.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. That is a common misconception. Now, the church does have a history. It does come from our history, but if I'm not mistaken, because we in our church, we really don't talk about the polygamous practices back in the day in the late 1800s, because we got rid of it. Our church obeys the laws of the land. We're really big on that. That's one of our big things, is that,
really?
Yep, whatever the law of the land is, where your church is, in no matter what country, that's what you obey. So really big on that. But whenever they got rid of polygamous practices back whenever, I want to say it was only like 40 years total that they did it. But when they got rid of it, a lot of families were already practicing polygamy during that time. So they were like, well, do you just want us to all divorce each other? Like, what is happening? It caused a big fight within the church. And then you had two off branches. So you had the reorganized LDS, and then you have the fundamentalist LDS. And both of those are just branches. They're also in Utah, but they're branches and they live in polygamous colonies.
That was, so give us some time frame. This was all prior to you coming, being born. This went on years.
This went on in the 1800s. By the early 1900s, polygamy was done in the main LDS church.
No, and I know you can't speak to the other branches because you weren't part of them and you're not part of them. But is there a branch of this LDS that still practices polygamy?
No, it's not allowed. Well, get excommunicated.
Spinoffs like Warren Jeffs was, yes. It was, a, a, he, he followed a lot of Mormon or LDS practices, but he kind of went off on his own, did his own thing, and was not associated directly with them. Would that, is that correct?
Yes, he is not a member of the main LDS church. Anyone practicing polygamy within the main LDS church would be excommunicated.
Oh, okay. So is he still practicing now, or is he kind of like...
He's in prison, isn't he?
He's in prison.
Oh.
Yes, he's in prison.
Yeah, he's a very bad, bad guy. Yeah. But
yay. Andrew always likes to hear about a cult leader that's in prison.
Yes, he's in prison. But if you could ever get someone on from his cult, I would love to hear that. As growing up Mormon.
Me too.
Exactly. Yeah, me growing too. Up Mormon, I was always very interested in polygamy and like you kind of are interested in that because you know it's a brief history of your church, but you're not allowed to associate or practice. And so you hear about these polygamous colonies. And so there's like a interest, you know, we would watch Sister Wives behind our parents' backs type of thing. Yeah.
I'm just trying to get a feel here. So you were born, raised, all seemed normal to you, right? Yep. Up until what age did you start thinking
questioning things
not
yeah.
right?
You know, because it's so ingrained in our family, I didn't grow up questioning anything until I got divorced. And in my, like when I was 39, 40, I didn't question anything. Well, you always have questions, right? Over the years. As I was raising my kids, let me retract that, because as I was raising my kids, I would say, that's when questions started to come up more. Like I'd go, but I didn't, it didn't make me want to leave the church. Right. So, but because now I was raising these three children,
what kind of questions?
Okay. Like for instance, because I was raising these three children and now I was their parent and their protector, things that the policies and teachings of the church took on whole new meanings for me. Whereas for me, they were fine, but for my kids, not so much. For instance, I remember the first time I was ever like, absolutely not. I was reading a Ensign. We have a church magazine called The Ensign, and every member gets it. You do have to subscribe and pay for it, just so you know.
Of course.
So, but every member is supposed to get it. So every member has to pay for it. And I remember it was a 2013 article. And it was talking about, it was geared, like the audience was definitely women, young women and girls and older women. And the overall theme of it was what we dress, how we dress, what we say, all of our actions and deeds, we are responsible for, because we can put the thoughts and control the thoughts in men. So our actions, deeds, and dress can put bad thoughts in men and boys. And therefore, women and young girls, it is your responsibility, and I'm paraphrasing, but this is the overarching theme. You're responsible for how you dress, how you act, what you say, all of your deeds around these men and boys, because their salvation is dependent upon you, because they can't control their thoughts. And I thought, first thing I did as a mother, and I was a temple recommend holding mother. The first thing I did was get into a very bad argument with my ex, because I was like, absolutely not. I'm not going to let them, you know, teach this to my children.
Oh, and let me guess. I'm guessing you have at least one daughter.
Two. And a boy
too. Okay, I was thinking. I was like, she's just not going to let this happen to her daughter or daughters. Right, right. Okay, I just wanted to clarify. I was kind of making an assumption, but yeah, I'm sure that you were hearing that, going, yeah, not my daughter or daughters.
Oh,
okay. Absolutely. Continue on.
At the bottom of these articles are Sunday school suggestions for teachings, right, for lessons. And so I could see that this was eventually going to become a lesson. And so I took my daughters aside and I told them, yes, you are. I want you to be modest because I want you to protect your body and respect your own body and all of that. But in no way, we talked about the article and I said, I never want you to grow up thinking that anything that you do holds all responsibility on what a man or a boy does to you or thinks about you or says to you. And then I took my son to the side and I told him about the article and I said, at no point in your life will you ever tell a woman that or blame a woman for how she dresses, how she acts, what she says, for your own thoughts and your own actions and what you say to her.
Okay.
Perfect.
You may not be able to answer this question or Melody. So in the Muslim world, and I can think of maybe one or two others, and I just can't think of the names, women walk around in burqas because the men cannot control themselves. Is that the idea?
Oh.
So I'm going to cover myself completely except for my eyes so I don't become a sexual object desire for the man in my community. Is that basically, like, I just broke it down that simple?
Yeah.
Is that the idea?
Yes, that's the idea. We don't fully cover, but we definitely are not allowed to show cleavage. We're not allowed. We used to put a pin in that, but we used to have only cap sleeves. So we couldn't show our shoulders. Anything we wore had to go to an inch above the knee or below, nothing higher than that. We could not, as a woman in the LDS church, you were never allowed to embrace your sexuality or to think of yourself as sexy. The LDS church has very strict rules about bedroom practices, even between a man and a woman who are married.
Really? Wait, whoa. So you, whoa. Wait a minute. You're brought up in this, and obviously you got married because you said you ultimately divorced somebody. They tell you how you can practice your private intimacy in the bedroom?
Absolutely. They do. It's vanilla sex. Sex is not for pleasure. Sex is to produce kids.
Not for
kids.
Pleasure. Oh, God.
Anything, Andrew, outside of the bedroom.
In my cult, I got a booklet when I got engaged telling me exactly what angle my legs had to be at. I'm not kidding you. That is
God.
How.
Oh,
yeah,
God.
I'm not. Yeah, it was that bad. That controlling. Yeah. So yeah. I don't know if yours went quite that deep, but mine was pretty controlling in that aspect. Yeah. So a lot of these groups, they try to control exactly what's going on in your private bedroom. Yes.
I just got to say this. Last night or yesterday morning, I did an interview with a BDSM for my other podcast, all about bondage, kink, and all that stuff. And now I'm going swinging to completely the other side. I'm going to, like, what was that? There was a movie called Culture Shock or something.
Yes.
It's like, wow. What a wide range of stuff we have going on in this world. It's just weird. Okay, so you're telling your daughters, this is not, I'm not going to raise you this way. Okay, and they were about what age at that time?
Tween to young teenagers. So they're, you know, 11, 12, 13 range type of range. And my son was, I would say my youngest was 11. My son was probably, or my youngest was 10. My son was probably 12. And then my oldest was 14. So.
Were there arranged marriages or you were freely allowed to date?
Oh, freely.
Other members. Oh, okay.
Yeah. It was frowned upon to marry outside of the church.
Of course. Yeah.
Clearly. But you were allowed to marry, who you wanted to, but the church, now that I'm on the outside, I understand how not mainstream the church is. The church is, when I say they're a culture church, they are involved in your finances, your private finances. They are involved in your bedroom behaviors between a man and a woman. they are very clear, and you will meet with the bishop if word gets out or you are having a worthiness interview and you, you know, say that you and your husband were, yeah, we're healthy. You know, we had some, you know, relations in the car, you know, or something, or on the kitchen counter, or, you know, something like that, like normal, healthy sexual, you know, relationships do. Yeah, I have been told that to my face that that kind of behavior is for barn animals, and that I was not allowed to partake of the sacrament, which is our Sunday thing where we take the bread and water. And I was not allowed to partake of the sacrament for a month. But
so this is blowing my mind. So because this is a new one, we're at episode 35 or something. And we've interviewed a lot of ex members and survivors. This is the first, Melanie, unless I missed something, and I didn't know in your cult that you said something about the angle of your leg. I did not know that. Yeah. So I think my question is, when you, this is going to sound funny, when you were doing it on the kitchen counter or you were doing it in the barn, I'm just joking, was this like you and your husband said to each other, screw them, let's have sex and have fun? Or... and do you think that was common among the other couples, or did many people adhere to that policy?
I know exactly what you're asking. And we were young, we were newly married, and we didn't know that it wasn't allowed. You know, we thought we were good because we were finally married. And, you know, it also depends on your bishop and how involved your bishop is. Our bishop at the time was very involved, and most of them are. But yeah, we definitely stopped doing it after that. So it did change.
But so you told somebody you did that, and that's how you got in trouble.
Yes. So once a year we have a worthiness interview, with the bishop alone, you and the bishop. And during that worthiness interview, a lot of questions come up, to see if you're worthy enough to maintain your temple recommend. And it goes into chastity questions. And it's up to him how deep he wants to go. And if you get the right bishop, which I did, he knows how to get the right answers.
Or ask the right questions. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah. And you and your husband willingly and voluntarily said, yeah, we did it on the kitchen counter.
Well, I said, he goes, I forget exactly the question, but it was a roundabout way to ask me about our bedroom practices. And I was like, we have a healthy sex life. Like we, you know, bedroom, the kitchen, like we're, and I'm just, yeah. So yeah,
just casual sharing.
But to clarify, at that time, you did not know that that was forbidden.
No, I really didn't. It's not until you become a married couple that they start ingraining in you that sex is not for pleasure. It is for children. And the whole, that's when you start being made to feel more frumpy and vanilla as a woman, and all of your anything. You hate your curves. You hate your cleavage. Like you want to hide your body constantly. And this is one of my biggest issues with what the church does to women, is that it happened to me. A lot of LDS women outside of Utah, and I'm going to say outside of Utah because there are different LDS Utah members are completely different. Outside of Utah, a lot of women become frumpy. We gain weight. We lose ourselves. We stop being confident because we aren't made to feel beautiful, and we don't feel beautiful. We feel embarrassed by our bodies. So that's what happens to a lot of LDS women. And which leads to the husband having issues, their sex life suffering.
Right. Right. I would imagine so. So I'm going to make a general statement here. Across, let's just say the world, you know, marriages, men and women will, after 5, 6, 7, 10 years, they let themselves go. Not they stop going to the gym, or they overeat, or, we know we have an obesity problem in America. So that's not uncommon. But in what you're saying is, it was almost, I don't know how to ask this question. Did you ever do that? Did you ever become frumpy, yeah, quote unquote?
Yeah. When I was 40 and got divorced, I lost, worked my rear end off, but I lost 79 pounds because I had gained 79 pounds. I was unhappy. Like everything I had was capri pants and cap shoulder blouses. I had one pieces, but if I went to the beach, I wore a t-shirt over it and then hated that my thigh showed. I became very frumpy. And I also, I'm like, I don't know if you want to keep this in or not, but it's part of it. Like I went from being a very healthy woman to hating sex. Like I felt ashamed of myself during those moments. So that was a huge thing for me.
All right. So this is done on purpose, I think, right? This is,
it's a form of control. Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. That's by design.
All right.
Yeah. It is everyone in the church, like not non-members, every single member in the church, whether they want to admit it or not, and they're lying if they say otherwise, we know for a fact that the church uses fear, shame, and guilt to keep us in line. We know that. Yeah. And for any LDS member to look you in the face and say, oh, that's not true, they're lying. Because even when I was a full-blown member and would have defended the church with my life, I knew that I was being shamed and guilted and feared and, told fearful things. I was scared to death to ask questions or look something up. We never looked up questions that we had.
So I have a question. When you talk to your children, about that article in particular, that caused a problem with your husband because he didn't agree with you. Is that where the, he thought that the article was fine and that you should be teaching your children the way the article said, and that it was that the beginning of the dissolving of your marriage?
Oh no, there was more to it. Actually, he left the church before I did, and that had a lot to do with our divorce, was that he was starting to pull away from the church. And I was very upset about that because I was so into it. But the reason why we had the argument about that is because he comes from what we call LDS royalty. So his ancestors were part of the pioneers that came across and settled Utah. So his name is very well known. His last name is very well known in the LDS church. So he can trace his lineage back to probably Joseph Smith.
What made him leave?
He was struggling with some other issues that are personal to him. But as he pulled away, one of the things that really sparked it is that as married couples who have temple recommends, your date nights are at the temple. So you don't go to movies and things like that. You do, but most date nights are you go out to eat and then you go to the temple, or you go to the temple and then you go out to eat. And I was going to the temple by myself while he was at home because he didn't want to. And that's where when he started pulling away, I started digging in deeper. And that was a lot to do with the divorce.
So it's fair to say that he slowly started drifting away and ultimately left. And did he file for divorce or you filed? What was the time frame there?
So I did. And what's funny is I actually went to our stake president and our bishop, because I don't know if y'all know this, and maybe you do, but the LDS church is the same all over the world. So unlike a Baptist church, which my grandparents were, you can belong to a Baptist church, but if you move to another state, they're not going to know you, right? LDS Church is your records travel with you. So if I move to the Philippines, my records are going with me. And they're set up like school districts. Mm-hmm. Where you live is what meeting house you go to.
Yeah, didn't know that. Okay.
So the church is the same all over the world, no matter what. And so after we separated, I had gone to my bishop and state president and said, hey, like, you've got to help me. And I did everything I was supposed to do, because we always involved the church. We always went to the bishop for counseling, for therapy, for all of this, because they were in our finances. They were in, you know, our sex lives. They were in everything. So I went to him for help with him, and I didn't hear anything from them. And a couple of Sundays we missed because things were, you know, we were very stressed. We were going through a divorce and my kids were very sad because we had been such a beautiful family for 18 years. And we missed a couple of Sundays. And when we came, when we got there, some of the leaders came up to my kids who were class presidents, and their first things that they said, because everybody knows everybody's business, so they knew what was going on. The first things that they said was they shamed my kids for not being there and said, if you can't be there to be responsible, you need to let us know. And I thought, oh, that's like, I remember thinking, oh, that's not, I don't like that, you know?
So I walked
on into sacrament, and the bishop, who shakes everyone's hand, didn't shake my hand. And I sat down and my son said, Bishop didn't shake your hand. And I was like, I don't know. Maybe he just didn't, you know, see me, or maybe he looked off and he was like, no, Mom, he saw you. And I thought, oh, well, that crushed me, you know, and people started looking at me different. People would give me half smiles. And these are people who would come over and do game nights at our house. I would sit alone when we went to the all women class. I would sit alone and I'm thinking, what's happening? And over time, it became very clear. And then I remembered that I was that person. Women who are divorced in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints are treated differently. Single women are treated differently. They're treated like you have a plague that other people can catch. Like, other people's marriages are going to catch your divorce plague. And so they didn't know what to do with me. So they put me on a do not contact list, and whenever I contacted them, they said, we want you and your husband to figure this out. You can come back when y'all figured this out.
You were being shunned internally.
Yes.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
Let me ask you a question, because my other podcast, I do relationship stuff. And so in a healthy relationship, if the marriage starts to fall apart, they may go to therapy. They may want to sit down and have a conversation and say, hey, you know, do you want to fix this? It sounds to me like Latter-day Saints almost sets up you for failure, because they tell you you have to have vanilla sex. And I don't know if they actually say you have to put on weight and look fat and ugly or whatever terminology they use. But sorry. It seems to me like they almost cause marriages to fail, because am I right? Because underneath that religion, you're still a female human being, and there's a male human being, and you have hormones, and he's got hormones. And while they're telling you that you have sex is for procreation only, you see where I'm going? I'm wondering.
I don't think they see it that way. I just think it's their element of control.
No, of course not. No.
I don't think they're trying to have all these marriages fail, but I do see what you're saying is that they are set up for failure. Absolutely.
Failure. So you probably don't know the actual stat, but is there a high percentage of divorce in the LDS, or is it low?
There is a high percentage. I don't know the actual stat. I will say this. This will kind of give you an idea. So I was part of a online LDS women's group that we all met online, and you had to know someone to be invited. And it got to the point where we were up to 1,500 people across the world, and we would have weekend retreats. So I met a lot of these women in person, and the other day we were going through, not the other day, a while back, we were going through and we were looking at the most prominent members. We're talking about hundreds are most prominent, right? Not just a few, not a handful. And everyone we started naming are divorced and married to non-members now. Every single one. I can name a handful out of hundreds of women that I knew and that we would spend one weekend a year together for 15 years. A handful, literal handful, are still married and still a member of the church. And of those, I notice in their Facebook posts, and I'm not judging because I came from a judgmental, you know, background, but I notice, I can see when they aren't following the church 100%. So even though they are members of the church, because maybe they're afraid to leave, whatever, I'm not them, but I can tell that them and their kids aren't following 100%, because I can tell in their dress. I can tell in the things that they post about.
Right.
So I can definitely tell you that I know more divorced Mormons than I know still married Mormons.
Okay. All right. Now, next question. And then I have a follow-up question. So Melody and I interview a lot of, let's take the Amish community, and I can't think of another one off the top of my head, where you cannot own a cell phone. You cannot own a computer. Mm-hmm. You cannot have electricity. You cannot go on the internet. You can't go to the movies. It sounds like LDS allowed all of that. You're talking about Facebook postings online group meetings. Okay, so
we're just like every other church. Like, literally, we can have dances.
So modern day things you're allowed to participate. Okay.
You're
not antiquated.
No, we have dances. We can listen to regular music. Like, we can listen to Michael Jackson. We are definitely in the world, right? There's not right. None of that. It's just when it comes to, we have the word of wisdom where there's no coffee or tea. You have to eat certain things in moderation. You can't be addicted to caffeine. You can have caffeine, but every once in a while, you can't have it every day. You can't be addicted to it.
How about alcohol?
No, absolutely not. No.
No?
No.
Okay.
No swearing, no profanity, no rated R movies.
I'm gonna add this in here real quick, because I think that there's some similarities with my cult for sure, because I can tell you that all the people that I know that got married there young, we all got married young because that's what you did. And we're all divorced too and married to other people, ex-members, and most of us are out of it now anyway. But what I always say, and this is probably very similar, is that even for me and my ex, I think we married cult versions of each other. And not only did we not know who we were ourselves, but we didn't know who each other were. And we didn't even know if we were compatible, because we were playing a role for the organization and we had to fit a mold. And so once we were breaking out of that mold, then we were trying to figure out who we were, trying to figure out if we were still compatible with each other. And is this even going to work? And most of the time it just doesn't, because when you get married, I don't know if you got married super young too, but that just adds to it, right? Because you're not in a place where you really can know yourself well enough to know if you're marrying somebody who's even compatible with you.
Oh, of course.
Most not. No. LDS couples get married 18, 19, 20, 21,
right.
Very young.
Right. So Vina, what time, what age did you finally walk away, and take us through that transition?
So I was 39 and I knew that I was headed for divorce. So I was like, okay, I'm going to go into my 40s and I'm going to be fat. I'm going to be single and I am going to be in my 40s. And I said, well, there's only one of those that I can change. And so that's when I started working on myself, and I lost the 75 pounds and 79 pounds. And I think the once they put me on the do not contact list, whenever I was the one that was still clawing my way to, you know, to hold on, while he just simply walked away, that's when I was like, oh, wow. Okay. So I stopped going. And the rumors went crazy. There were all kinds of rumors about me out there among the LDS community. My family participated in quite a few of them. So I got divorced he moved out in February of 2015. My parents did not darken my doorstep, even though they lived nearby, until April of that same year, because what we were doing was so disgraceful to everyone, to the religion, to the family, to everyone. My brother came and took me out to lunch. And the whole point of the lunch was to tell me that I wasn't wearing my garments. I need to fix my marriage. I need to get my stuff together and I need to
come back.
Yeah.
Yeah. And come back.
Yeah. Not, how are you doing? Not, hey, you're getting divorced after 18 years and you have three kids who are, how are my nieces and nephews?
No support. How can I support you? You know,
are you guys okay?
Just shape up. So that's when I started going down the rabbit hole of freedom, because I was like, I can look stuff up. I can ask questions. I can read a book. I could read books. You're just not allowed to read anything that is anti towards the church while you're a member. So for the
first
time ever, and we were never allowed to know stuff about the Masonic Lodge. And then my new husband was very interested, because he's not from here. So he's very interested in the Masonic Lodge. And he was like, I just want to know about it. So secretive. And I was like, well, let's watch a documentary. So we watched several documentaries, and I cannot give you the name of it because I don't remember and I don't want to lie. But one of the documentaries I was watching, and I was like, wait a minute. And I got so instantly sick. I paused it and I bawled my eyes out, because I saw one of the handshakes, the grips that we do, which is very sacred in the temple. I saw that in this undercover documentary of the Masonic Lodge. And I was like,
and it triggered you.
Yeah. And I was like, well, how is it? I started going down the rabbit hole. How is it sacred and from God himself, who appeared to Joseph Smith, if I'm seeing it in the Masonic Lodge? And then that's when I found out that probably 90, maybe 80% of what we do in the temple that's so secretive is a spinoff of what the Masons do that's so secretive. And the groups just aren't talking. No one's telling what they do in there. So no one knows what the other one's doing. And Joseph has swindled us all along.
Where did you meet your, I'm assuming you're still married. So you said you got married again. So you left the LDS and somehow you put yourself back together, right?
Slowly.
And you met it slow. Oh, of course. That's good. Listen, one thing I've learned in this whole experience is that, especially listening to Melody, the transition period from leaving to coming back to what a semi-normal life might look like for you is just, it could be 5 years, could be 15 years. Melody, again, 17 years before she put a Christmas tree up. She quit her first job because they made her work on a Saturday, you know, and that was the Sabbath, yada, yada. Yeah. So what was that transition period for you? Like, where did you meet your husband? And where are you today?
Well, I met my husband. I'm going to be honest. It's coming out in my memoir next year, but we trauma bonded. He is, he's a hockey player, a semi-pro hockey player. And we met in what was supposed to be fun. And we trauma bonded, both of us, because he's from a very strict Russian background. And we both just, what was fun turned into, now we've been together for almost, 9 years. So, but I will say that he has played the biggest role in helping me process this journey, because it has been 10 years since I left the church, and he's helped my kids process. He quite often, if I will have, I'll instantly, my response is always LDS, it's getting better. But I have an LDS response to everything, no, I can't do that, or I can't think like that, or, he's helped me kind of open myself up and do some research and talk about things openly. The biggest thing is, you know, he says, what do you do in the temple? And I was like, absolutely not telling you that. And over the years, I've told him a little bit more and more and more. So I've gone from, no, you'll never hear that from me, to, yeah, this is what we did. And I'll send him TikToks where I'm like, well, someone's brave enough to talk about it. And I'll send it to him and say, this is what we did, because I'm not brave enough yet to go that far. Mm. But yeah, it's been a 10-year process. And like you, Melody, I don't know when it'll be over, because I was born and raised in this religion.
You were born and raised. Absolutely. It's almost in your DNA. Yeah. So yeah,
it's like a default. I have a mother. Setting. Your brain just goes to the default.
100%.
Correct.
And I have a mother who's 82, and I don't know how much longer she'll be with us. And I will never tell her that I have fully and completely left the church while she's on the earth.
Oh, she doesn't know?
She knows that I'm inactive. And that's, to her, that's all she knows.
Okay, right. There's a stat you can be inactive. So, okay, right.
To her, she, you know, every time I talk to her, she'll say, honey, go to church. Because, you know, that is what she believes. And I would never, I'm not one of those, you know, at her age, I don't need her to know that.
Yeah. No, I'm fine.
You don't want to hurt her.
Just to quickly.
Yeah.
And just to quickly, when you talked about trauma bonding, you said, in the tone and the way you said it, I know what you meant. Trauma bonding, because again, my other podcast, I deal a lot about gaslighting and trauma bonding and love bombing and all that stuff. It does have a negative connotation to it. Like, you're not supposed to trauma bond when you meet a new partner, when you're dating. You're not supposed to do that. But I personally believe that it can be therapeutic sometimes. You hold in all this trauma. Yes, you can go to a therapist, you can go to support groups, you can go write a book, you can go on a podcast. But sometimes just sitting down with somebody that you are attracted to and you're getting to know and sharing those trauma experiences, and then maybe they have some to share, I don't know that it's all that bad. I just wanted to validate, because when you said trauma bonding, you almost said it like it was a bad thing.
I said it like that because I get your point, and you are 100% right. In the beginning, we were extremely toxic. Like, people didn't want us together because it was just so toxic. I had lost, he had his own things, his own part. So, and that's his. No,
right.
But for me, I had lost my 18-year marriage. I had lost family members that now wouldn't come around me because I wasn't going to church, and, you know, so, and had gotten a divorce, and a lot of them even like didn't talk to me for months. Right. I had lost that. I was losing my faith. I lost all of that in an instant, and I spun out of control. I still to this day have moments where I have to sit down and apologize to my kids. I'll remember something and I'll call them and I'll be like, hey, I haven't addressed this yet. And they're like, Mom, you have apologized so much. Like, you're fine. You're fine. We understand we were all spinning out of control. But there came a point where me and my husband said, look, we weren't married yet. And we were like, look, we're extremely toxic. And we need to decide if we're going to fix it and move forward and just be together. Or if we're going to go our separate ways, because we can't keep going on this path. And both of us loved each other enough that we knew that we wanted each other. We had spent time apart and we didn't like it.
And listen, what you went through in that stage of courting, the courtship with your husband, is not part of LDS. It's everybody.
Right.
I'm 64. I'm dating again. I have my baggage. Yeah. You know, I'm a recovering alcoholic. I live with bipolar disorder. I could sit down with a woman I went on a date with the other night. She tried to go through the trauma bonding, and I put a stop to it because I didn't want to go down that road. But I also wasn't very, 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 very serious about her. But if you're dating somebody with intent, like you wanted to go somewhere, trauma bonding can be helpful, but it can be toxic. but you had that, you guys communicated to each other and it worked.
Yeah, 100%.
Right? How many years you're married now? How many years you're married?
We've been married. It'll be 3 years in, this coming April. And he's no longer a hockey player. He's in the military. And we have, I have one of the the healthiest relationship like I've ever had in my life. And I'm 50 years old. So.
Wow. Good for you.
My relationships with my fathers have been super toxic. And for the first time in my life, my son and my husband are the two men in my life where it's, I can say I have beautiful relationships with men. And I didn't have that prior to that.
Wow.
Yeah. Some of those things, it can also be just being open and honest like that and getting that stuff out in the beginning of a relationship can also be a good thing. But if it starts out toxic and you fix it and you decide we're not going to continue down this toxic path and you both decided you're going to make your relationship healthier, it doesn't have to always be a bad thing.
Right. Exactly. It was actually very shocking whenever we said we need to, either commit to each other and fix this and move forward or go our separate ways. Both of us did a 180 and both of us were like, I choose you. I choose you too. And it has been amazing. I've never been a part of a relationship that has changed that quickly in such a positive way. But very thankful for him also that he lets me talk about church issues and, when things come up and I actively miss a church community feeling, but I'm so scared of churches and anything that might put the thumb on me again,
All right. So that would be my next question. And then we'd like to slowly begin to wrap up, but I was just going to ask you, where is your faith today? And do you go to any type of religious organization?
We go to a Bible study every once in a while. But other than that, no, because I've tried different churches. Nothing feels good to me. I instantly pick up on things that I don't like that I can see how they put you in a box. And
You're vigilant now. You're very vigilant.
I think I just want my relationship with my God and my Christ. And I think I'm okay with that for the rest of my life. Like I really am.
I say this to some of the guests and because I'm in a 12-step program and we practice a higher power, your religion or your faith can be between you and your higher power. You don't need to go to a brick foundation with a steeple to practice or to pray. You can have your own higher power and through either meditation or quiet walks or a trip to the beach, to connect with your higher power in the way you want to do it. It doesn't have to be sitting in a pew somewhere listening to a lecture of a man who's a maniac,
Absolutely. So,
What I like about this story, Vina, and Melody, correct me if I'm wrong, but the majority of our interviews have a happy ending, and it sounds like yours has a happy ending.
It does, for sure.
You're in a good place. Yeah. You're smiling. You're happy.
My kids are out. My kids are happy. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yes.
There you go. Not everybody that we've talked to has made it to the point, and I know you have a journey ahead of you. You still got a ways to go, but
no. And I can do the not wanting to be involved in any other organized religion because I felt like I did the same thing. It was like I tried a bunch of different churches and organizations, and I went, and I know I liken it to like being in an abusive relationship. I went in with all my walls up. I was like, I'm like, don't any of you people tell me what to do. Don't tell me what the Bible means. Don't ask me for my money. Don't try to control my life.
Yeah. Oh.
So I went in with an attitude, like looking for a reason. Give me a reason to walk out of here because I'm looking for one. And then, and I would always find one. And then I'm just like, I don't think I can do organized religion anymore. It's just too much for me. I'm too traumatized.
Same.
So. Okay, Vina, do you have anything that you could tell maybe somebody who's listening that, so now that I see, I was always under the impression that people that are in these organized religions, i.e. cults, couldn't listen to electronic media, you know, whether it's social media, podcasts, television, movies, but apparently there are some. So let's say that we have somebody in the audience who is in LDS or any other religious organization, and they feel trapped and they feel like they're starting to critical think, which is what Melody's catchphrase is. What piece of advice can you offer them?
Plain and simple, trust your intuition. If you feel a certain way, that a gut feeling, that gut feeling is not misleading you. They're going to tell you that your own intuition misleads you, but it's not. That is every warning sign that your body is and your mind is trying to give you. And we are taught to ignore that. And that is such a dangerous thing to do, because that can actually teach you to do that in other aspects of your life as well.
Well, and that's part of the brainwashing tactics. That's part of the coercion. Yes. That's part of the manipulation. Yeah. They teach you, tell you how to think, and don't trust your gut and or intuition.
Or they'll tell you that is from the devil. Melody, like, don't. That's evil.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or you're going to hell if you think that way. And again, if you leave, you're going to die. You're going to get cancer. You're going to have a horrible tragedy or something. So,
and I want to say this to them as well.
Sure.
There is a beautiful life on the outside. Like, there is a beautiful life.
There is.
Where you can explore and create and be the author of your own life. So trust your gut.
Good.
And realize that there's a beautiful life waiting on you.
Melody, do you have any final questions or remarks?
I think we're good. The only thing I'm going to say is that I just want to give you some props, Vina, for not only talking to your daughters, but your son when you read that article, because I was focused on your daughters and you're like, I didn't just talk to my daughters. I told my son, you're never going to put a woman in that position or make a woman feel that she's responsible for your thoughts and emotions. And I just thought that was, you deserve some props for that.
Thank you.
And I just loved that part of your story. So, and we want to thank you for coming on the show and talking to us and, you know, sharing your experience with us.
Thank you for having me. And thank y'all for what you do. Like, honest to goodness, I told my kids that I was going to be a guest and I told them what you do. And they were like, what's the name of it? And so they're going to listen in as well. They love that you give a voice to people who need it.
Well, it's wonderful. Our pleasure. And there's a whole story behind that. Everybody can listen to the earlier episodes to see how Melody and I bonded and connected, because I'm not a survivor of a cult. No. So, but all right, Vina, thank you so much. And I almost want to say God bless, but I'm very, I have to be careful.
That's when
I say that, because I don't know. Because my God, it may not be your God. So whatever, but. Peace and love, and thank you for your story.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you both.
Thank you. Yes. We want to again thank Vina so much for coming on the show and sharing her story and really personal aspects of her story.
Yeah, very personal.
Yes, very personal. But what an insight into some of the crazy controlling ways of the Mormon church in general. I mean, literally going right into your bedroom, which, like I said, I can relate because my cult was similar.
Yeah. And I did not see that coming. Like I said, in the episode, I was very ignorant about the Mormons. I thought they did have polygamy already and all that. And she said all that straight, which was great, because I think a lot of I have a feeling I'm not alone. A lot of people think Mormons mean you can marry, you know.
Yes, and that was originally their teaching. So I think you're right. I do think a lot of people think that is still part of their mainstream belief.
Right, And of course, it's not one of those things that you follow in the news. Like, so, you know, 1980, right. They stopped that. Who knew? Right. You know, I just thought it was who they were. And so, but thankfully they're not.
Yes.
But this whole concept of you having to have vanilla sex, and then after a certain amount of time, the wife, I forget how she put it, but the wife, she used the word frumpy. The yes. wife has to become frumpy. Meaning yes. putting on weight and letting herself go and not being pretty shouldn't be pretty, not taking care of herself.
Yes, and not wearing clothes where the husband, that are like flattering. Yes.
It's ridiculous.
Oh, it is. It is. It's a crazy, crazy thing. I still remember when Mike and I got married, I actually still had that booklet that I'd gotten from the House of Yahweh about. Basically, it was an instruction manual of how a newly married couple was supposed to have sex. And it was so detailed, like giving the angle of the legs. And I was telling Mike a little bit of our episode last night, and he was like, man, you know, so I wish you still had that booklet. That was kind of entertaining. It was just so unique and weird. And I'm like, I don't know where it ended up. But
but you know something interesting? Because the more I do this podcast about cults, the more I keep thinking about my religious upbringing. And I know I keep saying it was a Roman Catholic church, and maybe they were a cult, maybe they're not. But a lot of similarities, because growing up the Catholic church, you know, no masturbation, no sex before marriage. Matter of fact, you had to, if you were going to get married in the Catholic church, the husband and the fiancés had to go to pre-cana, I think it was called, where you go to 6 weeks of like marriage school. I can only imagine what they talked about in there. So these cults want to control every aspect of your life, including the intimate ones inside your bedroom. And that's just wrong. It's just totally wrong.
It's a little bit off the wall.
Yeah. No, I think the wall came down on that. So. But thank you, Vina, so much. It really opened our eyes, and hopefully she'll come back in a year when she writes her memoirs, and we'll have her back on.
Absolutely, we would love to have her back on. And yes, I agree with you, Andrew, we want to thank Vina for coming on the show, sharing her experiences with us. And we, of course, want to thank all of you as well for tuning in to Cultimatum. Your support is always greatly appreciated. And we do ask that if you could take a moment to rate and review our podcast on platforms such as Apple and Spotify. And don't forget to follow, share, and keep listening to all of our latest episodes.
You can also show your support by joining our Facebook group under the name Cultimatum Podcast.
And you can also find us on additional social media platforms such as Instagram, Pinterest, TikTok, YouTube, and Threads.
If you have a cult or human trafficking experience that you would like to share with us, please feel free to contact us at cultimatumpodcast@gmail.com.
And any ex-cult members out there looking for additional support can consider joining the Cult Escape and Recovery Group on Facebook.
And if you're interested in hearing more from me, you can find me on my other podcast, Anonymous Andrew, Life and the Choices We Make.
And as always, stay safe, stay informed, and remember, you're not alone.